jól rendszer. My mind went for rambling. The terrible old throat there, I went to me. The old scarf was there on the pre-essence. Yes, I'm a 1.5 inch, I thought. My mind went to rambling to where the night is lying. I stepped on board a wheel, and I followed with the will. Till next I came to anchor at the cross of France. What was in the wind? That's what I want to know. Or better still, who? And I'll be back. The Earl left his country from the place where I was last night. Down in Charlesworth. You know what I reckon? I reckon they're coming back. There you go now. Ireland is changing. There's a new Ireland being born. That's the truth. For a few moments. Thank you so much. Next up to the open mic, Mr. Joe Sweeney.
Hello everyone. I'm reading a little fable tonight. It's called The Key. I came to the entrance of the great garden. It was surrounded by a thick wall and a high locked gate. But I knew something precious and beautiful was being protected within. An old woman I met on the road told me that thousands of pilgrims come every day, full of heart and hope and hunger and desire, each touching their key anxiously, hoping it will unlock the gate. She said she meets many of them coming back disappointed because they couldn't get in, and they throw their broken, twisted keys away. She says she has a collection of them back at her little cottage in the woods. She says her house is like a museum to me. children are hot. Hearing this, I retreated and lay down on the grass outside the gates, with the key in my trembling fingers, without any real hope. I was very tired from my long journey, the longest of journeys, and I fell asleep. I was awoken sometime later by a disturbance. Something was plucked from my fingers. It was the key I had brought to open the gates of the garden. I heard a clacking sound from the treetop, and looking up, I beheld a magpie, an interfering magpie, one for sorrow indeed, with my precious key in his mouth. And then I heard a ringing sound as the magpie dropped my key on the other side of the gate, then flew away. I heard its mocking cackle fading in the distance. What hope was there for me now? I looked one last time through the beautiful golden gate, and then sadly turned to go. But as I walked away, someone spoke to me, and looking around, I saw someone coming down the garden path and placing my key in the gate. I heard the great lock clicking open, and a figure stood there, arms open, inviting me in, saying, "Welcome to the Garden of Love. It only opens from the inside."
And next up to the mic is Jennifer Matthews.
So bear with me because it's a bit rushed in delivery right now. For this poem, it takes place in China, in a town called Duyun. It's in the southwest and it's not really visited much by Westerners. And I was there with a couple of friends, sticking out like a sore thumb. The poem's called Panda. My girlfriends are surrounded by silks in this library of femininity, and I am on the outside looking in. There are rows of ruby and cherry blossoms. There are sapphire dragon pools. There are jade envy forests. We are just beyond the heady spices and the salt of the Duyun covered market. I shuffle softly to hide my girth behind a butcher block table as the seamstress giggles, fingertips to lips, at the numbers that measure my friend's Western willowy length. They're souvenirs, handmade, cheap house, dresses with exotic Eastern slender cuts which, while worn, will lend an instant image of exoticness. My souvenir, sphere of the tape wrapped wide around my hips, my thighs, my belly, marking the size of the true panda. Chinese slang for Westerner or an animal, which is black-eyed, weary, fumbling, unapproaching. Thanks.
Next up, the other mic to receive welcome is Mr. Tommy Livingston.
Before I go any further, I'd like to thank Paul Casey for organising this poetry feast. When we're living in a town, a court, where they paint art centres dark grey battleship. to call the sleeping hand. Far from the land of the sleeping hand, where the ancient spires and the temples grow, to the shadow cast as time collapses and history goes the way it goes. And far from the hearth and the simple things, to the tune that makes the heart grow, and from the valley of song as night comes along, a sonnet caresses the soul. A blackbird thrills with the tune of hills, and mountains prance with the laugh of dance. And time itself leaves nothing to chance, as a full moon weaves its earthly glow. And so moves this meadow, a meandering dream, and wind whispers its secret to cornstalk sighing. This ancient way, its song surviving, a new tune is found, this world reviving.
Thank you, Tony. Joe, could you pay her a bit later? Next up, Sadeem McCarney. Get your back right up here.
Yay.
I think we should have a self-service night. And we'll put Sadeem the guest poet for that night.
So do
I
wait, Daddy?
What? I mean, at the door. Lee McCarney.
I wasn't going to read this one because it's quite strong and there's a lot of slang. It's a lot of northern slang, so that's
brilliant. That's
so I thought I'd share it with you. But it is based on a woman and it's a true story, but at home we don't have, there's only three towns, big towns in Tyrone, so hotels are the nightclubs. So you have to like travel maybe 40 minutes or whatever to go to the nightclub. That's just a background in it, and it's pure culture as well. So there's a lot about where it's from. Okay, it's called Ode to Knockdemone. It was easy growing up in Tyrone and Lady. Plants barely hadn't been written. There was no talk of house prices before we drive you up. The Celtic Tiger wasn't even a kitten. I was raised in the townland we call Yarnick's Go, halfway up the hill of the road, just outside a wee village called Aher, not far from the Blackwater Slope. I was the youngest girl in the family of eight children, three cuddies and five strapping lads. Me height to say I got to me grandmother, and me height to say was me dad. And I was a good looking blade, if I don't say myself, humps and bumps in all the right places. And I think our ones were a wee bit jealous of me, because they all had big, long, terrible faces. When you see me getting on late on a Saturday night with me white stilettos and black mini skirt, me mother said I looked like a floozy, and me father warned me never to flirt with the boys from Ballygally or Barra, because they had the name of being a bit mean, and if you lie with them dogs, you'll get yourself a flea and your tongue will never be clean. But our ones had got it all wrong about me. Boogieing and dancing was my only joy. For God's sake, I was only 17 years of age. What would I be doing wanting a boy? You see, I'd work hard all week and I'd save a few pence, but by the weekend I'd worry and fret, because our John liked to drink and he mightn't get the keys of Daddy's brand new red box of Chervet. You see, he was the only one with a full license, so on a Saturday night he'd get loads of hassle, until our wee car was filled up and pointed due north to Killyclocher in the Knocknemoe Castle. But getting there was only half the problem. I'd have to bluff the owner Mickey Ward. You see, I was still underage by 6 months, so getting past them bouncers was hard. So I held on tight to our John's arm and let on that me and him were with other, and Walter Owens used to give us the dirtiest look, and so did Don Ant and his brother. But now I was in there was no stopping me. I'd jive, huckle, buck and head bang, and all the time I'd look up to the band on the stage to where Rock Stewart and the Tatterman sang. Oh, Knocknemoe was a place to test out your steps. I danced till me poor feet would swell, to Joanna and her sunrise tequila, to the love bug in the great bag of hell. And we boogied away, my sisters and me, while our John had to stay off the booze. And the high heels were kicked into the middle, and we, like Indians, we danced around our shoes. And that's the way it was for a number of years. Boogieing was how you got money the night in. And if you hadn't much crack by the end of the dance, you'd go outside to watch the charming boys fighting. With the men from Galway, Castledare, or Flintna. Oh, they'd kick, they'd punch and headbutt. But you know, it's like I watched Manny's around. and I can't mind anyone being too badly hurt. And then the hunger would come on you, and you'd run down the road in a hurry, and stand outside Mary Lamb's chip band for a bag of chips all covered in curry. But one night my routine was shattered, to the dress now telling me story. For at the slow set I was on my way to the loo, when I met this gant from outside Loch McCrory. When I say I met him, well, he wouldn't let me by. And his white shirt only buttoned up half. And his arms out clapping, roaring and shouting. Jeez, you'd think he was clapping a cat. Well, he got a hold of me and he pulled me in tight to his chest that was all hairy and furry. And the whip of old spikes that near got me high, but it still couldn't kill the smell of the slurry. Well, you see, I was going to renege and say no thanks, but my mother always told me that was a sin. But if he didn't stop pulling at the back of my blouse, I was going to draw out and skip through. To do more tattoo, he said when he opened his mouth. Be clear on with my instant reply. Oh, I love a conversation of Gaelga. I think I'd get a shortcoming slip out. Well, he told me his name was Brendan, and he'd on him his loveliest suit. And his cavalier was outside with his furry dice in the dash, and a horn that went doo 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 doo. And he told me of his father's 100 head of cattle, and 50 acres of good barn and land. Ah, well, now he was starting to get my attention. And a young lassie will understand. I was in love by God and let no man deny me. Struck in the chest with a cupid's arrow. I could picture myself in the middle of that herd with a silent pay of barrow. And we've been steady for a few years, me and Brendan, but if you're to wed, you need a big purse. So me and him went over to England, where I was to try and learn how to nurse. And that's the way it was for a number of years, till Brendan asked me the big question. We were to marry the following October, and there was only one place where we'd have our reception. So when we were home at Christmas, we dodged into Oma, but our dreams of a perfect day were rumbled. For when we got to the place of all our young memories, didn't we discover the whole thing had been tumbled. And there were two men standing behind the scaffolding, one had a hammer, the other a pick. And I thought of all our young days in that very spot, which on the side of it near made me sick. And there was a crater with a fancy car in the drive, and he was wearing a golfer t-shirt. Little did he know that his new house was built on the first spot where I got my first cart. And there was children swinging high from the branches of a tree dangling by a blue rope. It was at that foot of the tree one Saturday night when I let Brendan get his first grope. Well, myself and Brendan go back into our car, and we couldn't help being depressed. I guess nowadays nothing's sacred, and the people now think it's the best. But don't be worrying about our big wedding day, for we're across the border about the Four Seasons. And I suspect the man that's flattened the knock in the mow had nothing only his financial reasons. And so times have moved on now in the sweet part of Tyrone, but some crack tonight will be mine. We're getting a taxi bus now into Oma for our stop the night with Sally O'Brien.
Next up we have Patricia Walsh.
Yes. Thank you, Paul. Kind of backtracking a bit. This is one I wrote. It was a poem I wrote when I was 16, 1992. It's called Teenage Advertisement. I thought the best, I thought me the worst. I was merely a passenger in O'Connell's hearse. I've loitered in corridors I didn't want to recognize. I thought no moral things for years that size. Kept the exercise and methylated if the power was in the rich. Woke up in the afternoon and lived in one bit. By the relaxing speeches, so in common. I was often unsure after hangover vomit. I'd tell that term I've ever written to a grave. But I walk into windows, I walk into gates. I walk into Mary's door 6 minutes late. My name always comes up on Wednesday's previous evening. Over my notes, my talking, and over everyone's breathing. Made it switch, strange, wonderful. Even if understood. And being like this, my generation good. The risks I've taken are rarely appreciated. But even for dreaming them, I have some delighted. And the guides of those in danger being bored. And lit my lamp up in the fire escape door. Thank you. This one slightly later. If you could just sing me a song. Announce to the world besides that I killed you, now without a fight. There were times I didn't want to, but take that wicked hand when I came of it. knew the first item on the vehicle list and had to go. The luxury time spent in train had no harmonious and higher plan. No twangs in the hierarchy as if drowned on the court. How I wish to save your sweet voice pulling my voyage in the craggy out hours away from the world. Days that happened further than just then. I, the human, you lost my life in the rock. Struggling for survival, I had to take yours. I have pieced together your broken body, shattered with abandoned grief. Lying still in my mindless framework, recording church music word for word as I played at the funeral. Nothing can translate the cadence of the new voice, rising as they are falling carelessly with flash. Thanks.
And next up we have Mr. Lyle Harris.
Instead of verse or story, I thought I'd try something new tonight, a bit of dialogue. Country is in such a state that you just have to laugh, really. So I hope you get a laugh out of this. It's called Time Travels in West Cork. I'm not much good at the accent. I really should have thought ahead and got Joe to do the Dublin accent. I'm ashamed to do the West Cork accent, but it's too late now. Emmett Square, Clonakilty, 2008. Enter Michael Collins. Well, begod, haven't she done well for yourself, Collins? When I lived in that house over there, before the war, it was just muddy grass in the square, and the houses were all run down with just a few solicitors' offices and lots of spinsters walking their dogs. Enter Bertie Ahern. Ah, it's yourself, Michal. You know, my people from West Cork were from West Cork, too. Ah, yes, Captain Donovan, right? It's a pity you and Deb didn't get on, Michal. You'd have made a fine president. Not Taoiseach like myself, of course. Been having a bit of financial trouble recently, Bertie. You need a good accountant, boy. I am an accountant. Yeah? Well, a bookkeeper. So what's the story, Bertie? Tell me all, or I'll have to get my network onto it. And they can find out anything. And they're not paid $2,000 a day, right? I'm Michal. Leave your bloodhounds out of it now. You know, these second tribunals, they're all just second smoke and daggers. Smoke and mirrors? Mirrors, whatever. Anyway, I'm waiting. Out of it, boy. I did it for charity. It's not well known, but I'm the main benefactor of a number of Northside charities. You see? Bertie, you're a gas man. Sure, I know. Now, Michal, what about you? What did you get up to with your one? The bird on the banknote, Lady Lavery over in London, when you went over for the negotiation. I always wondered, was she stringing you along, both yourself and Winston, at the same time? I know, Bertie, I'm asking the questions, right? That's my problem. Everyone's always asking me questions I can't answer. It's not fair. Who said life was meant to be fair? Anyway, tell me the truth or I'll get Sam Maguire on the case. Sam Maguire? I know. But wasn't it great the way you had him working as a mole in Dublin Castle, and he a prod? The Brits never found out who the mole was. That must have driven them gaga. Get it? Good one, Bertie. Good one. I see they have a statue in Dunmanway now of Sam, as founder of the GA. Not as good as my statue here beside Emmett Square, though. Ah, but a great man, Sam. Well, I'm more of a Man U fan myself, you know. I go over and support them, and they support me. I know, Bertie. So tell me the whole story. Confess to Father Collins now. Well, listen, maybe I was a bit slahoolic with the political donations, like, but let's not upset the apple tart altogether. Look at me record, after all. The Celtic Tiger. I invented that, you know. Around the same time as Slattery invented Riverdance. Celtic Tiger, hmm? Nothing to do with our American cousins wanting to get a foothold in the common market. Well, there's a bit of that now. But look at the peace process. I got that going, you know. All on your own, you know. Well, you're a mighty man, Bertie. Well, okay, John Hume stuck his neck out nearly as far as I did. But there were a lot of people claiming credit for feck all. I know, Bertie. Tell me, how did you get on with Winston Churchill? Winston. I knew he'd go on to do great things. He tried to drink me under the table, you know, in his study, in a man-to-man all-night discussion, about everything under the sun. Put me off brandy and cigars forever. You were a matron there too, my Micheál. What about Lady Lavery now? I'd love to know. Enter Kitty Kiernan on the other side of Emma Square. Mick Collins, I have a bone to pick with you. Uh-oh, gotta go. Kitty's on the warpath. I have an appointment in McCroom. I've just remembered. Watch your back, Micheál. Ambush country up that way. I'm more afraid of Kitty Kiernan than the lad. Anyway, I think it was one of my own free stairs that plugged me up in the Bailman Law. Wait till I find the bastard. Well, you must have got a nice big bribe from the Brits, Micheál. I suppose they couldn't trust you after you said the treaty was just a stepping stone in the fight for a 32-county republic. Yeah, but who told them I said that at an IRB meeting? That she was Dev, that sly whore. I know, Dev wouldn't have done that, Micheál. You know, you should have joined up with us. You're a true Republican. You'd never have made a real blue shirt. Not at all. Enough of the old politics. Let's go for Jarn de Barrett. I hear there's a lively bit of music there tonight. Hope to have that. What about your appointment? Your appointment. What the hell with that? I've had a belly full of politics. Ah, well, hello, Kitty. What has you looking so hot and mad? You know what, Mick Collins? It was only an old thing, Kitty. 'Tis you I love, really, girl. Go on out of that. If I see you making big moon eyes at the barmaid in the Inchy Donny Hotel, I don't know, men. Ye and your flying Collins. Hehe, you're a scream, Kitty. Isn't she, Micheál? Anyway, back to my own trouble with the castle. Who will rid me of these troublesome lawyers and media feckers? Micheál, you're a good man for that kind of thing. If I gave you a little lift, would you rub out a few guys for me? Only joking.
Thank you, Micheál. Next up, Mr. Shane Carrington. And last one of our last one. I'll have one please today.
The very old one. Sea voyage. That fine summer's morning we set out on a voyage well planned in all detail. In a short time then we felt nature's cloud. The Lord has allowed me to tell this tale. All four crew experienced and well rested. But a storm veered from its predicted track. Twin diesels throbbing and well tested. Strength, power and safety we did not lack. Wind now rising and wave height too. Two and after deck at open steering sight. Visibility zero from pilot house view. Lashing salt spray with a constant fight. Speed cut secured any loose fitting. Abandoned track and bow to swell. Settle down to a long watch pitting, our experience and our skill as well. Satellite phone no longer working. Set engine cooling, sea caught to shut. To fight the constant pitching, jerking. Lifelines clamped around each gut. Broadside on would be much too risky. To turn right back was now option zero, as our heavy craft became much too frisky. We had no wish yet to meet Captain Nero. But a pyramid wave we saw approaching, a conflict of force 9 and heavy swell, to rose to the peak to consider broaching. Paused right there, from the crest we fell. The massive crash drowned the crack of the davit broken clear from deck. Our rib now dangled from the back, while battered by one ghastly wreck. Quickly now cut this lifeboat clear to avoid more damage to our transom, a prized possession for someone here as she speeds away so very handsome. But alas, below, to hurt members of crew, dislocated joints which cause great pain. Now a pan-pan message must be put through to call for help while we waited in vain. Seascapes empty for miles all round, but this wild trip was never dull. From the VHF, just a static sound as dolphins dive around our hull. Next, the EPIRB to relay our exact position was heard much later by a spotter plane, who then acknowledged our transmission from 80 miles off our shipping lane. The alarm was raised and services alerted. They swooped down low from dead astern with instructions and news of a ship diverted, plus a chopper scrambled, which we did learn. Some time elapsed for a roaring sound signal the advent of our white knight. No relaxing, even though we are found, much work remains while there is light. Flagpoles and all obstacles removed from deck, heaving line to grab, beware static tricity. Speed and course adhere to, carefully check, while downwind hovered the giant, the Corsican. Two brave souls winched off with great care, while the Casus spotter keeps watching brief. Lifeboats furthermore offer to do their share, but decline with thanks as we take our leave. With your GPS calling the electronic shots, we press on, wishing we had warm heaters. Wind speed given at 35 to 60 knots, wave height reaching nearly 14 meters. Yet ahead appeared the submarine. Seconds later, a yawl rowing so light. Then a lighthouse where they had been, as mirages flickered in and out of sight. Many hours later in the early morning, battering on to the very last waypoint, from astern a huge searchlight warning of lifeboat's arrival. By it we are joined. EPIRB signals had the radios jammed. No aerial trouble as had been suspected. A lifeboat to track as the swell we slammed. One more hour and then to our berth directed. With a few cracked ribs plus salty eyes shot blasted. Well done to the services, too many to be named. Without them, for the storm had been outlasted. Welcome allies who don't try to get nature tamed.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. And next up, Ms. Annie Power.
It's number 11 on Lone Pass, top 20 of the points of Green Island. Wherever goes a brown and white tourism, acting on its own back, powerless. Sometimes the colours of the island, the brown points are long direction. Pose for photos next to your back. Jerry Ryan listens to how more the housewives read about it. Passing on this attack of men who were righteous as much as. We wrote a film the other day. I saw a coffee table book very seriously. Saw fears to themselves, nervous breakdown, and investigated. I am a curator. I map the changes in my mind, record its history in my heart. I like your back. I think I might love you.
Thank you. Dear Pope, it's my new poem titled It's Done Away. To say that the act of making love without your blessing would make me or you rot in hell for eternity is total one. To say that even to think about enjoying myself or another is a sin, is good one. To say that loving myself needs to be confessed to a man in a black dress or a toddler. To say that even talking about sex openly in public must make me a total wanker. Priest, cardinal, bishop, Pope, admit none of us can keep our hands like this.
I'll tell you later. Next up to the microphone, Mr. Alan Cropey.
I love to hear of their music and the love ones and everything, but sometimes I have to conflict with stuff too. So, Pat Kenny's already been mentioned by you, Annie? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've had it, Pat Kenny. I'm going to explain some of this poem, the background. We have the institution RT, which is Public Service Broadcaster. And I've nothing against public service broadcasting, but the way it's organized in Ireland is that they fit the sports events and do all this kind of stuff and play vendors and these kind of programs. Which is with tax, with license based money, which is a problem really. And then I read in the newspaper that last year 176 people were put in prison for not paying their license fee, which is appalling. So yeah, that's the point of it.
How many?
Put in prison by the court, yeah. And there's another person as well who's mentioned, is Beverly Cooper Finn, and she got in trouble for telling people to avoid tax when she was working in the bank. And then she broadcast that, and then she sued RT, and she lost in court, so she owed RT 1.2 million euro, and she was elected by the good people of Mayo in the last election, top of the poll. So basically she's looking at a ministry now in the government, And because of this, I think RT going to write off the 1.2 million debt at the same time they're putting people in prison for not paying licensee. So that's the background to the point. So 176 people have been put in prison for not paying the license fee, for not paying Pat Kenny's salary while Beverly eyes up a ministry. And she was RTE a not insignificant fee of 1.2 million, but a million here or there. It's not something about which we should care. These sums float around our ears. What's a million for this or that? What's a billion come to think of that? It's only money, that's what I say. But 176 have been put in prison. Surely something stinks in this nation. It's symptomatic of a nation with childhood poverty, a nation obsessed with GDP. As though GDP could insulate our homes, as though GDP could tell us everything is alright, as though GDP could feed us and tuck us in at night, as though GDP could really end poverty. A rising tide lifts all boats, they say. I guess we'll find out sooner or later, because the tide is rising and it might be lifting boats. But I live in a house, and my house doesn't float on water. Or like corporate stock on an imaginary sea of fencing.
Thanks. Next up, would you welcome Mr. Aaron Lewis.
Through art and through art only that we can realize our perfection. Through art and through art only that we can shield ourselves from the sordid perils of actual existence. Of forever. Stars are alive on nights like these. We were born to be sanctified. The water boys. The moment has come to free us from thought. Stars shine in the midst of darkness. We are alive and free in the twinkling of an eye. The music went on and on in my mind with a firestorm of creativity. Nights by the warm fire, crackling, take me back to temple boy and rugged landscape, cared and carved by sea and wind. Like lovers' kiss smacking the texture of each other's lips, these moments of ecstasy and creative resolutions will save us from ourselves. We are together as one in the cradle of universal bliss, holding on to the one experience that lingers on in love. What are the meanings that avail us? What is this new meaning of clarity that is swimming in the sea of my veins? When a new child is born, prejudices should crumble. Bonds will be remade and new eyes will experience this world of colour and non-static grace. To relive out our ancestors' dreams is maybe our quest. We must allow the moments to guide us, and we will be recognized in our moments of unique and religious passion. Be still and know the face of God, to truly be free in our own moments is to be sanctified.
I've got a minute behind me.
Alright?
Yeah, I've got one more. deep, dark gold freedom was the new calling card. The revolution had begun. The world had rejoiced in the love of all. Falling stars and eagles above in the dark blue of night. An old woman with dark, thick wrinkles, sagging her face, looked silken, sad and uncertain. This freedom may seem freedom, but every ideology leaves someone out. The world order, people unite and hold hands. We accept one another. The human race comes in many shapes and colors. We come to recognize our similarity with exactitude. We flee from foe and share time with loved ones. Hold them close to our hearts and bask in the beauty of love. Thank you very much.
To end up tonight, we have Mr. Dora Hyde.
I know the rain was wet, and we knew there was no chance the second time, no drying out period, no second life, no silence for a wicked mind. Along the concrete pavement, water ran, bringing dead leaves choked up rain. Our fingers touched, then became entangled, like ivy leaves along the deserted country lanes. Journey, and I don't think it's both broken bones. The right leg I always took for granted when walking, often thought it actually cost me the shoe leather place of stop in search of a long block book. But it was always dominant, thrusting forward without thought, not even a sideways look at an equally important limb for which the shoe was never bought. In one good morning, I tripped himself awkwardly, sideways and down, on the ankle of that good right leg that brought me everywhere I wanted, in sunshine, hail, rain, snow or fog. I moved very slowly after that, sometimes not at all. Nobody came to say, "Here, hang your hat, sit down here on that nice soft seat till someone collects you from the hall." Suddenly, the left leg awoke and walked, trotted along the bright road. It was dawn. The sun shone, there was heat. The sweat dropped in the irrigated ditches. Life was the step, life was the road. Thanks.
It's an amusing artifact, this river of kingly colour, an ocular delight. The stream of purposity, the vain aortic mixture of spirit liquid, has even evolved vampires overdose on blends of rich, thick contradiction of unraveled breaths expired, and even as muses, children, seasoned muses, each leave a trail of purple dripping from tongue and teeth, a new harvest of mystery, and even as starved poets sip the mountain manna purple poem wine. Dream drunk poets, pulse deafened, descend purely their season steps. Thank you very much for this.